Well, I'm going to present you now my what I did mostly during my PhD, and it's about causal decision making, and I'll go further as with the presentation. So, yes, okay. This is the content. It seems a little bit large, but I think it's not that much. But I'll try to go quickly when I can. So, as I was saying about me, I was trained originally as a mathematician in Mexico. Then I switched to data science. And from there, I did my PhD in computer science, but in a very theoretical, even a little bit philosophical topic, which is the intersection between decision making and causality. From there, I did my first postdoc in Vienna, and I just came back on December. So, what am I interested in? Mostly the philosophy of probability, and from there, the foundations of Bayesian theory, decision making, some causal inference, and later in my life, I noticed I could take all of that into foundations of quantum mechanics, and I think that's what I'm here. So, me and physics, even though I was, as I was saying, trained as a mathematician, then computer science, what am I doing here exactly? Well, it's honestly Elias Ocon and Daniel Sudarsky's fault from Mexico. I attend their seminar since a couple years ago, and I really love this topic. So let's get started. Also briefly, my own philosophical position. As I was saying, I had a deeply Bayesian formation, and because of that, I was first tempted towards epistemic interpretations of QM, for example, cubism. Then, in Elias's seminars, I became way more a realist. But I'm still curious about balancing realist attitudes with our own positions as truth seekers in a Kantian spirit. So, but that's more of a dream. So, let's get formally started. What I'm going to present is a paper done with my supervisors, which were Luis Enrique Zucker and Hugo Escalante, and also David Danks. Okay, let's get formally started. So, what's this causation thing? I know you have done some stuff on causation and quantum mechanics, but let's get a few steps behind. We know it's an idea present in science since the times of Aristotle, and it's a tricky notion to formalize. We kind of already know that. It was excluded from statistics mostly because of Fisher's own attitudes or philosophical position. And the framework developed by Judea Perl is the most used nowadays in computer science and therefore AI. Okay, so, but what can we do with this causation notion, for example? When we reason about explanations and we are asking why questions, for example, why do we get sick? Why does a certain drug works? We are kind of already thinking within the field of causation. And the idea of the field of causation or causality, at least within computer science and AI, it's about taking these questions seriously. On the other hand, we know that an important aspect of intelligently acting in the world is being able to make decisions under uncertain conditions. For example, we want to go to our workplace. How do we get there? Maybe there's some traffic. Or where shall I get lunch? Maybe there's a long line. How to solve this? Well, it's already known since the times of Daniel Bernoulli that the most natural rational idea is to balance between how desired an outcome is and how likely it is. From this, we have the notion of expected utility since those times. Then, It was until the last century that von Neumann and Morgenstern formalized how to make choices if rational preferences are assumed, which is a very, this is taking axiomatically, and the decision maker knows the probabilities of events. In this case, they have a result and they prove that a utility function exists and such that you must take the expected utility. So this first result, the von Neumann-Morgenstern theorem, is about choosing with known or objective probabilities, which we know, thanks to the Finetti's representation theorem, that we rationally can think of probabilities as frequencies. But at the same time, it's very well known in the philosophical literature that defining probabilities as frequencies is very problematic. So, what other options do we have? Later came Jimmy Savage, and he proved that if a decision maker does not know the objective true probabilities outside in the world, then the rational thing to do is to choose as if maximizing expected utility with respect to a subjective probability distribution. This is probabilities that live in my head and are just an instrument to make good choices. So this theorem is actually about choosing with subjective probabilities. And it's also really interesting, I think, because we can turn this around and define probability as that thing used to make good decisions. So these two theorems provide formal criteria for decision making if rationality is assumed. And this is a big if, but I'm not going there that much in this talk. So actually, the theorem by Savage is basically the foundation of Bayesian statistics because it allows you to represent uncertainty as a probability distribution, as a subjective probability distribution, and then update according to Bayes' theorem. This is, you first identify the source of uncertainty in your problem, and you put a probabilistic model on top. Uncertainty about what? And here is when it starts to get a little bit tricky. You do need to assume there is a world outside in order to assume uncertainty about something. And I have this own, this is like my own thinking out loud question. Can a realist epistemic Bayesian inspired theory of quantum mechanics exist? I don't know. I don't know if PBR can answer this question. I don't know. I would like to think a little bit more about this, but that's one of the topics that interests me a lot. So, just as a small side note, these two criteria, von Neumann-Morgenstern and Savage, are the basis for many techniques used in AI. For example, reinforcement learning, which is how ChatGPT was trained, is a framework for learning by interaction. An agent chooses an action, moves to another state, and then receives some reward. The learning algorithms for reinforcement learning problems attempt to learn what is called an optimal policy, which is simply how to make an action. But they do this by solving the Bellman equations, which can be shown to be equivalent to the maximum expected utility. So in some sense, all of the AI impressive algorithms are only based in what we call associative data. So associative data is merely correlations, which is if you take the definition of a correlation seriously, a correlation is just an interesting random fact. It's really not something, it's not an ontic situation or property of anything. It's just something that turned out to be. And it's impressive that doing this works, as you can see in ChatGPT, for example. So let's take a little bit of perspective from the human side. It's also known from the cognitive science literature that acting in the world is actually conceived by human beings as causally intervening in the world, and that humans can learn and use causal relations to make choices. So, a natural question is, how do we formalize decision making when causal information is present? It would be desirable to have some explicit and computationally implementable criterion for decision making, analogous in some sense to the von Neumann-Morgenstern and Savage theorems, if we want to provide the foundations of causal AI. So, it already exists an optimality criterion for decision making by Julia Perl, in which it is assumed that the causal mechanism which controls the environment is known by the decision maker. So here we have some sort of causal von Neumann-Morgenstern theorem, but it's actually not proved where Julia Perl states it. So here, what we are going to do is state and prove a causal decision-making theorem, which considers the case in which the causal mechanism is not known to the decision maker. And we are going to take as inspiration Savage theorem and proceed by using beliefs, subjective beliefs, about the causal relations that may hold out there in the world. So maybe this is not interesting for you, so because it's more towards the AI people. But I will talk a little bit about some game theory because I think it's really nice. Okay, so let's get a little bit more formal in the classical decision-making theory. Okay, a decision problem under uncertainty is the mathematical model of a situation in which you have an agent which must choose one out of many available actions or options with uncertain consequences that depend on maybe unknown factors. But we do have some sort of ordering of the consequences in terms of the satisfaction that produce in the decision maker. And we are going to assume that the decision maker is rational, which is a statement about the preferences, which is, say, some sort of logical consistency of the preferences, and we are going to take them as axioms. And we are working here within the classical idea of rationality. Other notions exist, for example, prospect theory by Daniel Kahneman and those people. And that's the whole field of behavioral economics, like defining other notions of rationality which allow for more real economical situations. Okay, the von Neumann-Morgenstern theorem, it's formal original formulation is in terms of lotteries. So you have a bunch of lotteries in basically a lottery is obtaining some reward or prize with a known fixed probability. And the von Neumann-Morgenstern theorem tells us how to choose from lotteries, which is, as I was saying, unexpected utility. Unexpected utility with respect to the objective true probabilities which are out there in the world and are known by the decision maker, and with respect to a function that the theorem proves to exist. The proof of the theorem shows it exists. But the important thing here is the known probabilities. You have to know the probabilities out there in order to use or to justify your decisions using von Neumann-Morgenstern. Savage, on the other hand, shows he only assumes rationality and then shows that a probability measure exists as well as a utility function such that choosing, rationally choosing, It's equivalent to max to choose according to the expected utility. Expected utility with respect to the subjective probability measure and the utility function. But these two theorems are limited in the sense that they rely on associative data. This is correlations, as I was saying, just correlations and patterns found in data, rather than stronger causal relations. And there's also the problem of obtaining the actual probabilities in order to make choices, but that's kind of another topic.
Mauricio, could I ask a
Yeah.
question?
Yes, of course.
So you did say explicitly, but you're imagining that the probability distributions that appear in the von Neumann-Morgenstern theorem are inferred from, finite run data, that those are the correlations on which the associations on which they're based. Is that how I
Yeah,
should understand it? Yeah.
so if you're going to, let's say, use the theorem to act in the world, then you must quantify your probabilities in that way, for example.
Okay, and including causation does not in this approach impact the utility function. That's fine from a causal perspective.
Yeah, it should affect the probabilities, for example. But yeah, more on this later. Yes, of course. So, what about causality? Because I have been talking about causal decision making, but so far I haven't said anything about causality. So, some thousand years ago, humans began to realize that certain things cause some other things. Tinkering with A may change B, and you kind of start interacting in the world. And it's actually also studied, for example, by people in cognitive science, how children learn, and they have realized how much of causal content is in the learning of children and stuff like that. So the concept of causality, at least what we are going to understand here of causality, because there are actually a lot of notions, we are actually working here within the context of interventionist theories of causality. So here we're taking causality to be a notion dealing with regularities found in a certain environment or context that are actually stronger than merely probabilistic or associative relations, in the sense that a causal relation, once you know a relation is indeed causal, then you can use it to evaluate change in a consequence given an intervention. An intervention, and this is like the key notion in this causality framework, is actually different from observation, because an intervention is actually going out there and changing the joint distribution of the variables, which is performed mathematically formally by forcing the value of some variable to a specific value. For example, let's see this really simple example. You can observe a barometer falling, and that increases the probability of a storm. But if you manually force the needle of the barometer, then you are not changing anything in the world. I mean, it sounds really simple, but that's actually the key insight from to distinguish interventions and observations. Also, for example, in a purely associative world, in a non-causal world, a patient would avoid going to the doctor in order to reduce the probability of being sick. And cities would dismiss their firefighters in order to reduce the number of fires. If you reason non-causally. So we need a working definition of causality, and we're going to take causation as a stochastic relation between events within a probability space, as formally stated by Spirtis in his book. It's also there are some requirements, for example, being transitive, being non-reflexive and stuff like that, but Let's keep it here. Okay, also, I'm going to talk briefly about the framework of causal graphical models, which are basically graphs, DAG, which encode causal relations. And the thing here is this operator named do, which allows you to perform an intervention in the model by forcing, and this is the how you write it, by forcing the value of a variable to a certain number. Okay, so now we are moving finally towards causal decision making. So now we want to consider decision making, which we have seen is important in the world, with causal information, which I also mentioned is how humans tend to think. So it's kind of a really natural question. So we are now assuming there exists a causal relation between actions, the actions available to the decision maker, and the consequences she will observe, in the sense that any chosen action will actually cause the consequence. Now, how do we make choices in this context? So we just need a causal environment, which is basically a probability space in which there is a causal graphical model such that the actions and outcomes are connected. Sorry. Are connected via the realizations in the causal graphical model. This is, of course, done formally in the paper, but the details are not that insightful. And we define a causal decision problem as a causal environment in which you are considering the preferences of a decision maker. The preferences, which, of course, we are going to assume to be rational. So,
Can
now,
I ask a question?
yes, of course, please.
So, can you go back to your previous slide?
Yes, yeah.
So this preference order is like an order between different decisions. Like, do you have one causal structure, or here you also uncertain about what is the causal structure?
Yeah, we in the next result, we are going to be uncertain about the causal.
Okay, but so far this order relation is not between causal structures. You have one causal structure.
The preference, it's about the available actions.
Okay, cool. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, so now we consider a rational decision maker facing a causal environment in which she knows the causal model controlling the relation between actions and outcomes. So, of course, the idea is that the decision maker can use the known causal model to find the probabilities of causing a desired outcome, given she takes a certain action. And it's what Judah Perl already told us. Basically, he considers a causal graphical model, the probabilities encoded by the graphical model, set of consequences, actions, and he states, because he actually does not prove this, that choose that preferring A to B is equivalent to doing, in the sense of the do operator, intervening with action A, seeing the probability that A causes a certain consequence, the von Neumann-Morgenstern utility of the consequence, and then you simply kind of add it all and balance it. So this new decision-making result is actually taking into account the intervention of the agent in the environment out there, not only the probabilities that the agent kind of only knows by seeing them, like seeing them is as if it was some sort of movie. No, here we are now taking into account the actual going into the world and doing something. That's kind of the new thing here. But yes, this assumes that the graphical model is known. So Equivalently, the action that must be chosen is the one that maximizes this, of course. Okay, so now we are going to consider the case in which a rational decision maker does not know the causal model. And we are going to add a new axiom for the rationality axioms to keep things simpler in the proof in the paper. We are going to say that choosing within a causal decision problem corresponds to an intervention in the true causal model, independently of what me as an agent thinks. When I act, I am intervening the true causal model. I'm like really intervening in the real environment, independently of my own beliefs, of my own subjective beliefs. So this is the main result in our paper, which is saying you have a causal graphical model, you have the preferences of the decision maker, and we are able to show that there exists a probability distribution over causal graphical models. So now you consider a family of possible causal models, such that now what we are going to do is same. Choose A, we intervene with option A, we check the probability of one of the possible causal models in the family, the probability of causing C within that particular model, and then balancing all of the models according to your probability, your subjective probability distribution over the models. So let me put it in a little different way. First, you sample one of the models in your family of possible causal models. So you take one, you fix that model G as if it was the true one. Then you use Judea-Perl's result, which is this part, in order to calculate the probability of causing C in that model you sampled and that you are taking as the true one. And then you balance everything with the, this is kind of the classic utility, and you balance everything and you obtain a way to choose in this unknown context. So, an interpretation is same as I was saying. You are considering a distribution over a family of causal models, and then within each of the causal structures, you use Perl's result in order to find the probability of obtaining a certain consequence given the intervention, and then you are able to take the analogous of the maximum expected utility and make a good rational choice. So let's take a little application. We are now going to extend the decision-making setting into a strategic game. A game, as we I'll show you a little bit in a few slides. Okay. A game is a model of a situation in which several players in this jargon or decision makers must take an action, and the consequence that they will observe will be affected both by what their action causes, as well as the actions of the other players. So now we have some sort of mixing of consequences.
Marzio, a question about the definition you gave for the causal status theorem is:
Yeah.
are you imagining an uncertainty over like the causal models within a single graph, or are you sort of saying like the agent could say like there could be multiple different causal structures, and within each of those, I could have multiple causal models, and ultimately, there's no restriction. It's just everything is a possible causal hypothesis, and I have some belief about them, and I'm maximizing utility.
Thank you. That's a really interesting question. And I actually kind of consider that in another paper, but with the aims more of of actually learning causal relations from data. The thing is, having a family of causal models, let's say like graph one, graph two, graph three in a bag, in a set, and having probabilities of possible graph of possible causal models, it's kind of equivalent if you think in the of the concept of a random graph. So it's actually kind of the same in the sense you can either have like the model, like each of the models and say a number associated with them, or you can have a random graph model which generates the possible causal structures.
Okay, so there's no restriction to one causal structure
Yeah,
in
no, no.
your statement. Okay, good.
Just add that, but there's also the potential for uncertainty about the parameters that supplement a given causal structure, like
Yes,
the
of course,
function
yes.
that, okay.
Exactly, yes, it is. So now, in the context of games, we are going to consider, as I said, several decision makers interacting in the sense that the action of one affects the outcome for everyone. So we are going to assume that the causal mechanism that controls the environment is one for everyone because it's let's say the real world, and it's remain fixed, which is a questionable assumption, but let's do it like that. And it is unknown for each player. It turns out that a model of with this flavor has already been studied by people in economics, and it's called a Bayesian game, which allows each player to have probabilistic beliefs about the information that they use to make decisions. So, in the games we are going to consider now, the uncertainty of each player will consist of the uncertainty about the true causal model and what an action do A causes if a certain causal graphical model, for example, one of the possible models in your family, what if you intervene on A and what this action will cause if a certain causal graphical model is considered to be the true one? So we have the uncertainty about what's the real causal graph, and also if I'm considering a graph to be the real one, then what am I causing? And we are going to take this into account in the game. So in a Bayesian game, basically each player has their own set of actions and what we call the, let's say, like a prior over the uncertainties in the game, which could be the knowledge of the other players. So you are also taking into account what the other players believe in order to make their own decisions. So
Sorry, Mauricio,
we.
can you clarify what this signal on the previous slide? What's the
Yeah,
signal called?
it is the think it as a Bayesian prior about the like this omega, like the admissible causal models. So the idea is that every agent will have their actions, but also this signal thing, which allows them to probabilistically reason about the uncertainties in the world.
What is capital T sub I here? That set, what does it denote?
Yeah, it's just a let's say a technicality used to you can encode there the knowledge of the players, for example. It varies in each game. It's just, let's say, some mathematical addendum you have there in order basically to ask for this condition.
So for me, it looks like sort of a labeling of each player for different sets of causal models.
Yes. And if you would have lived in the 90s, for that observation, you would have won a Nobel Prize. Which is basically why, because this Bayesian game kind of had two fathers, and one of them actually builds this notion in terms of labeling, which he calls types, the type each player has in order to reason, blah, blah. So, yeah. Okay, so as I was saying, since the uncertainty is the true causal model, I am going to consider my set omega as a family of admissible, but very relaxed, causal models. And a particular omega in omega being the true state of nature, what is happening is it fixes the causal model that controls the environment in which the players will play. So in classical Bayesian games, you have your real, like your true state of nature. Then each player receives a signal, which is simply this function, and the small ti's are, the big T is the collection of these small ti's. And don't get too stuck in this. It's just saying each player will be able to update the information they have once, say, omega is realized, which can happen at the beginning of the game. But what I want to do now...
Mauricio,
yeah,
sorry to interrupt again. Can you go back to the previous slide? Yeah. Sorry, I just want to get clear on this function tau. I was probably misinterpreting it. I thought you meant here a deterministic function, but now I'm thinking, do you mean this is like a probabilistic thing, that there's like... that the tau inverse might still leave me with uncertainty about what omega is?
Yeah, the uncertainty, of course, is the players do not know which is the real omega.
Right, but if the signal a player gets, T1, is it some deterministic function of omega that just might coarse grain the omegas, and so that's
Yes.
It is,
yeah,
I see.
Yeah.
So then, but then what could the inverse of such a function be? Because like a coarse grained function doesn't have an inverse. So when you write tau inverse of ti, what do you mean?
No, it's an inverse image.
Oh, I see. So it's just like a set of possibilities in capital omega that are consistent with t.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, and then you're assuming here something like a uniform, if that set is more than a singleton, you assume a uniform posterior over them, and then that's how I compute pi of omega given tau inverse of ti?
Yeah, I mean, pi does not necessarily have to be a uniform, could be whatever. If we are true Bayesians, then the pi's should respect the player's own subjective judgment.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. So now we are going to consider these causal Bayesian games by considering the probability pi of, and this is the same pi from the previous, of small omega being the true state of nature. And the whole, the big omega set is the family of causal, of possible causal models. And the probability Ti for each player given omega of observing a certain consequence by doing some action if omega is the true model. And this if means formally like the Bayesian subjective belief the player will use. So we notice that the posterior probability, the updated TI, induces itself a probability distribution over actions for each player once a desired consequence is fixed. This distribution, according to our own decision-making result, has actually this form. So the prior, and now here we have this small difference. So now each player will be able to take into account their own subjective valuation of omega being the real causal model and the probability of, given that small omega being the true causal model, causing a consequence C if each player performs intervention or action AI and the other players, that's what this minus I means, perform some action. Here, this was also a kind of a headache when we were thinking about this. If here you should have do of the other players or only given the other players' action. And we convince ourselves that here you should have only the action, not the do of the action, because this is for each player in their own causal model. They only consider their own intervention, but the other players' actions as merely occurring out there, let's say given, but not necessarily considering the intervention of the other players. And now the final idea here is that we are able to define a causal Nash equilibrium. So now, for each player, we define the following probability distribution over consequences. So here we have the priors for each player and the probability of causing for each player and the rest of the players for this specific causal model. And you have this probability over consequences. Now, using that, here, like this one is, of course, this one, you define a new utility which is able to take into account the knowledge about the causal structure of each player represented by PI, which allows to evaluate the probability of causing certain outcomes in terms of the actions by using the do operator for each player, as well as the other actions taken by the other players and the preference, of course. So I know this is kind of very clogged there, but it's you can use it in order to define the causal Nash equilibrium, in which you have, of course, this is the previous UIC, and a Nash equilibrium, a classical Nash equilibrium is a set of actions of each player in which no player can benefit by switching action. So now we are arriving at an analogous version of a Nash equilibrium, but considering causal information for each player. And this is what I said, how to consider the best possible outcomes given the actions taken by the other players. Okay, that was Okay, so now, just as wrapping this up, what we did in this work, or what our aim was, by extending Perl's result to the case of unknown causal information, we have established a direct relation between choosing theorems for associative and causal information. And having shown that this kind of isomorphism exists, then it's valid to say that the action outcome probabilities in decision problems in general can be grounded in causal models. That's kind of the contribution of this paper. And well, that was everything, but I would like to briefly mention, maybe you're thinking, what am I doing here in Perimeter Institute, theoretical physics? Well, I am convinced this has a lot to do in foundations of quantum mechanics. For example, I mean, I know there are lots of questions. Rob Spekens had already explored some relations of causation, of causal discovery algorithms and quantum mechanics. For example, there's also this question about causation being required for a fundamental description of nature. Maybe, maybe not. I have my own doubts there. Also, regarding the definition of causation itself, I have troubles in the case that the notion of causation is able to say that the moon causes high tides. I don't know. I don't like that. I mean, for me, the notion of causation should be a little bit more restricted, maybe just taking into account the actions of, say, rational agents that kind of decide to act in the world, but not taking into account phenomena that kind of happens on its own. That's matter more for philosophers of science, but I think it's very related deep inside to the foundations of quantum mechanics. For example, when people are talking about Bell type scenarios or Wigner's friends, and you are talking about experimenters doing something, maybe a causal formalism should be required. I mean, I don't have the answer, but that's kind of the topics that really interest me, and I think that's what I'm here talking to you. Thank you. If you have any questions, please let me know.
So can I start with a question? So in your last part where you're talking about these Nash equilibriums, no?
Mm-hmm.
What happens in the case when there are like two players and they have a distribution, the causal scenario that are possible? Like, I don't know, one player is certain just with events for A implied B, and the other player is certain just about structure with B implies A.
Okay.
Because in this case, I will not even think there is an equilibrium, and there are also sort of, there's not a general right consistent description of the things. No, they can never agree.
Yes, of course. I mean, in fact, there's already this Aumann theorem in game theory, which actually says you cannot agree to disagree.
Yes, what I was thinking about that, no?
Yeah, what I would think probably, I mean, Nash equilibriums do not exist necessarily in this kind of deterministic in sense of how each player chooses the actions. They do not always exist. You have to go like a level above and consider like stochastic, like distributions over actions. Only in that case, Nash equilibriums exist always. And I did not consider that case. And maybe like in a real life scenario, well, we also know that a Nash equilibrium is not necessarily a good outcome. So maybe the one that has the wrong information will kind of be screwed by the other one. Because remember, I am assuming that a true causal mechanism exists. I mean, the truth exists, which I don't know if it's there, if it's
okay.
If that happens in real life, I don't know if truth exists, but in my setting, it does.
No, so in this context, there is sort of, it depends on the utilities, no?
Yeah, of course. Yes.
So it's sort of these people start fighting in the game, and at the end they have an equilibrium, and the equilibrium gives sort of an intuition of what is the causal structure also to each agent.
Yeah, of
but
course.
This causal structure that emerge is not dependent on some outside, but is dependent on their utilities.
Yeah, it's related, yes.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Maybe two questions. Actually, many questions. Let's see, where should I start? Do you have a concrete example, like maybe just a toy example of a situation where using non-causal decision theory would give, you know, one ordering of actions, but using causal decision theory would give the opposite ordering for those actions? You know, just to sort of highlight the significance of using causal decision theory.
Yeah, I mean, those kind of situations and kind of paradoxes exist. For example, this one I kind of forgot the name, but there exists a paradox in which it has already been shown that by using merely associative probabilities leads you to one result, and by taking into account causal relations takes you into another. Yes, it exists, and I also forgot the name.
Okay, this is like you mentioned, like in your talk, there was like a reference 7 for Pearl's causal decision making. What was reference 7? Is that his textbook or some paper?
Yes, his textbook. Yes.
Right, textbook. And so that's this example you have in mind is in the textbook.
I don't remember exactly, but I think I have seen it more in the context of decision theory. For example, probably in the book by Gilboa. I don't know if you know it. It's a really good book. No, I think I didn't include it in the references. But I could send them to you if you want. Who are you? Sorry, I cannot see the.
I'm Rob Speckens.
Hello.
Okay, hi. Okay, let me just a follow up question to that, which is. There's an interesting paper that came out in 2021 by Dominic Yansing causal versions of maximum entropy and the principle of insufficient reason.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so in it, he argues for, well, he wasn't the first, but sort of a causal version of the principle of insufficient reason. And it seems to me you might need to avail yourself of that causal version of the principle of insufficient reason rather than the regular version in this sort of causal decision theory. So let me give you an example, and then, you know, maybe we can talk it out whether it's... So Yansing refers to a puzzle that Pearl introduced called the party-goer puzzle. And the idea is this, that you have these Alice, Bob, and Charlie are going to, you know, either go or not go to a party. And maybe you start out knowing nothing about each of their decisions. So, you know, equally likely for each of them to go or not to go. Uniform distribution. And the marginal on Alice and Bob's decisions, of course, is just, you know, the product of total ignorance about each of their decisions. And now somebody tells you that actually Charlie's going to call up the host of the party. And if both Alice and Bob are going, Charlie's not going to go. So now you exclude the 1-1-1 case, right? You know, that's not going to happen, right? Now, the principle of indifference might tell you, okay, so you should now update your prior to a uniform distribution over the other 7 options. The other bit strings. But causal reasoning says, that doesn't make sense because you started off knowing that Alice and Bob are sort of equally likely to go or not to go, and their decisions are uncorrelated with one another. Why should learning how Charlie bases his decision on Alice and Bob's decisions change your marginal over whether Alice and Bob are going to go? It shouldn't. And yet the principle of insufficient reason tells us that it would. And so the causal principle of insufficient reason says you shouldn't be assigning priors over the values of those three variables, but rather in this case, you know, C is an effect of A and B. You should be assigning priors over the values of A, the values of B, and the values of the possible causal mechanisms that connect A and B to C. That is the right thing to be assigning a prior to. That is the right thing to be expressing indifference about. And it seems to me that here, like what, you know, you do have to set down your priors at some point to use causal decision theory. So it feels like you ought to make use of this causal principle of indifference rather than the usual principle of indifference. So anyhow, yeah, what do you think about that example?
Well, I would say that I'm actually kind of already doing this, and let me try to convince you why. Okay, here. So you have your party goer, and here in my proposal of how decisions should be made, the prior the party goer is using is defined over the set of exactly all of the possible causal connections that control his world. I mean, this family F of causal graphical models is all of the possible models that the agent is considering that could encompass the real situation, if that exists. Even if the truth does not exist, this still works, and as because the same happens in the original Savage theorem, you don't need like a truth. Same here. So the probability, the prior PC is indeed considering the possible causal connections governing the decisions of the other two players.
Okay, yeah, I think that makes sense. That ultimately, your prior knowledge is always being expressed as knowledge about which causal model applies and not just prior distribution over all those variables.
Yes, of course.
Okay.
Hi. So in this this theorem here, you have a classical distribution, I think, PC over causal graphical models. Is there any sense in which you could extend that to a situation where you had indefinite causal structure? So in quantum gravity, you think you might have something like a superposition, quantum superposition of different causal structures. Could you imagine treating that kind of situation here?
Maybe if you consider model one, model two, superposition of model one and two, blah, blah, and then on top of that, you put your distribution. Of course, continuous stuff, radomic coding derivatives could be a little bit messy, but maybe it could work. In fact, when I was in Vienna, I met Charles Bruckner, and we were talking about possible extensions or generalizations of the notion of probability, and we had one or two talks about that. Really interesting, but I really haven't taken that into account here.
Thank you.
I have another question. You mentioned at some point that you worried about whether you should, in the case of multiple players, all of whom, you know, multiple parties, all of whom have actions, whether you should be looking at, you know, do AI and do operators for the other players or just regular conditioning for the other players.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, for the case of like Alice, let's say Alice is the I-th player, it would make a difference whether she's just say, you know, observe some variable under whatever its natural causes are or intervenes on it. But when mm-hmm. she reasons about the other players and she presumes that they're all sort of making some action, then it seems to me that the Perl framework would say it doesn't matter whether you just condition or whether you use a do conditional, because
Alice,
by virtue of knowing that those other players are taking actions, it basically believes that, you know, that they have the freedom to choose the value of those other variables, and there isn't any natural mechanism that could be common cause related with anything else.
Yeah, true. Yeah. That's true. Yes.
Okay. So when you said it, you know, you decided on the observing,
yeah,
it feels to me like you could have equally well have made it a do conditional. It wouldn't have made a difference.
Yeah, that seems correct, yes.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
Could you go back to near the beginning where you argued that we could think about a probability distribution as the thing that leads to
making? Yeah. I think you mean here, I think.
Mm-hmm. Right. So this just called to mind, Ila, your sort of recent work on Rigner's Friend with Rob about when the kind of agents who are being tasked with making good decisions is not the same as all observable agents, and then does that allow you to have like quasi probability distributions, etc. And I don't know. Like, is there precedent? Like, what exactly motivated you to include this statement?
Let's say this is more of a formal statement rather than a real practical out in the world statement. But let's say to show the advantages of this, of the contribution by Savage.
Ah, so in terms of like subject of probability, so you can
because the thing, yeah, I mean, even though as a mathematical object in terms of measure theory, blah blah, probability is well defined. As an the operational definition of probability is always tricky. I mean, we know that the definition by limiting frequencies has its problems. The subjective definition also has some problems. I mean, what's probability in the end? And what I'm kind of saying here is that you can take people actually making decisions and extract probability from them. That's kind of the spirit.
Mm-hmm. When you were talking about Nash equilibria, you indicated like a preference over the actions of all of the agents. So like an action for you was like a tuple of like, this is what everybody would do, and this strategy for what everybody would do is better than this strategy for what everybody would do. But it listed sort of like actions for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
In quantum experiments, sometimes I feel like we have we have to choose a measurement that we could perform, and then we can either get information about this or information about that, but we can't sort of do both at the same time. And so often we sort of are operating with information about like subsets of the variables, even like in a causal description,
mm-hmm. Yep.
Subsets of the different counterfactuals. Has there been any work that you're aware of in terms of like Nash equilibria where it's describing preferences not over all of the agents, but over different subsets of the agents taking actions?
No, I don't know, but it actually sounds really interesting indeed. No, but I'm not aware of nobody doing something like that.
Thanks.
I just have a short follow-up to Ellie's question about the interpretation of probability. So the second bullet point in the slide is sort of the approach where you sort of try to define probability using utility theory. And the proponents of cubism, and Chris Fuchs in particular, I think definitely takes this point of view, not just for classical probabilities, but quantum probabilities as well, that probabilities, you know, should be defined as the things which govern your betting behavior about, you know, the outcomes of your actions. So I'm kind of curious whether you endorse that view. And for me, the kind of difference it makes, I think it does make a big difference, because if I take that view, then, for instance, the probability I assign to something like dinosaurs having roamed the Earth is really about the bets I'm willing to take about fossils being discovered tomorrow, and not expressing my uncertainty about what actually happened in the past. And for me, that seems not right. But I'm curious. Are you said you were influenced by the cubists and maybe subjective probability theory. Do you think this is a good definition of probability?
I mean, I think it always depends on what do you want to do. And I also feel that you should never let yourself to be taken by a theory into unrealistic assumptions. For example, as I was saying a few slides ago, even if we are talking only about uncertainty, you have always to ask uncertainty about what. So, for example, maybe from a purely operationalistic point of view, you would assign the probability of the dinosaurs existing 0. But we are indeed talking about dinosaurs. So if you have a reasonable attitude towards science and towards the world, I think it could be useful to take probability in this sense, but always contrasting it to good practices in science.
So I'm trying to extract from that so you're not committed to this utility theory definition of probability, is what I'm hearing. Is that right? That you would be happy to have a broader notion of probability.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. But I think the question is still open. I mean, what's probability? I mean, at least from the perspective of philosophy of science and those people, I think it's really not quite clear what probability actually is. I mean, yes, of course, mathematically it's just a subset of measure theory, but so what? So, I mean, you're not saying anything. But what do we really mean when you ask the probability of a dice turning a certain number? I mean, what's really happening in order to say that? And what is happening in the world in order that we can that we can actually say correct things about dice out there?
Okay. So I have another quick question for you. Are there other big results in decision theory or kind of adjacent fields that you think are in need of a reanalysis from a causal perspective? Or in other words, you know, what more is there to be done in this kind of space?
Yeah, probably these foundational notions, at least getting them correct, because most people, for example, people in AI, in current AI, are not quite aware of the limitations and the assumptions that these foundational notions are using. And then these people take these results as part of their algorithms and then go out there and claim, hey, we have discovered general artificial intelligence. And you are like, what? I mean, you are only using correlations. I mean, like, how can you... What do you even mean with your statement? I mean, I think that's kind of the task that must be done, to be certain about the foundations and the good use about all of this.
So like one of your early slides talked about reinforcement learning. You think, for example, that a causal reanalysis could lead to better reinforcement learning, like better AI systems? Yes, or is it just about analyzing them?
No, in fact, there are already some works in causal reinforcement learning. For example, there's a guy named Elias Barenboim. He was a student from Judah Perl, and he's pushing really intensely this causal reinforcement learning thing. And yes, it has been shown to lead to faster learning and stuff like that.
Okay. Thanks.
Yep.
No other questions. So that's it.
Thank you. Thank you so much.